want to welcome everyone to our Keeping on Track open line. Our topic today, the keys to using performance incentives. My name is Dana Barocca. I'm the CEO of Lighthouse Consulting Services, and we'll be hosting our program today. We have a few housekeeping items, then we'll jump right into our topic. For those of you joining us for the very first time, Lighthouse provides in-depth work style and personality assessments for both new hire candidates and for staff development. We also offer a number of workshop topics to associations and trade organizations. And if you'd like more information, please email me as indicated on your screen. Our Keeping on Track open line series is in response to a number of calls we've been getting from many of our clients, both domestically and globally, to address the various business issues that most organizations are facing today. Our goal is to make this an interactive program, so on your screen, you'll see an area you can send questions or ideas during our discussion, and we'll attempt to respond to as many of you as possible. So please join us with your thoughts and insights you have along the way. At the conclusion of our program, we'll open up the line so you can talk directly with our guests. You'll also want to have some paper and a pen handy to take notes, since we'll be sharing many ideas that you'll want to consider and implement with your team and discuss with your trusted advisors. We have a full house today from people not only domestically and from Canada, but also from throughout the world. And I want to welcome everybody. Our guest today is Mark Emmer. Mark is a longtime friend and business colleague. He's also a very cool guy. Many of you might know Mark from his best-selling book, Intended Consequences. If you haven't read it or haven't gotten it yet, it's really a must-read book. The release of Mark's book was also covered by Forbes, which is great publicity. If you haven't read it, the information for getting a copy is on your screen. Mark is the president of Optimize, Inc., a California-based management consulting firm, and is sought after by CEOs as Mark being an expert in strategic planning and profit improvement. His content has been covered by Forbes, Fox Business, and CNBC. I feel privileged to have Mark with us today to share ideas that will help each of us in preparing for the future and for dealing with today's business issues. Also, registration for our next program will begin at the end of this program, and the topic will be building a sales and marketing plan that's implementable and within budget. Mark, welcome back. We had so many thank you notes and compliments the last time you were on. We wanted to have you back on again, so welcome.
Thank you, Dana. Hello, everyone. I've actually been trying to shake that moniker of consultant. They say that 80% of business people hate consultants and 20% are consultants. But given what I do, I've had several people over the last few days ask why we're focusing on this particular topic today. So if I could, let me share from 20,000 feet my general business philosophy, and perhaps that'll give you some insight on why I'm so passionate about this particular topic. I believe that every organization has to follow a logical progression. First, you have to have a strategy, a unifying vision for your organization. Second, you need to have a series of measurements that allow you to know if you are successful in executing your strategy. And then, and only then, can you have a set of incentives that are impactful and that will allow your employees and your management to have line of sight back to the strategy. And I can tell you that I've been speaking all over North America this year on a number of subjects, and pay for performance, without a doubt, is the one that seems to elicit the most discussion and interest and debate. And it did when we had this same webinar last year. I'd also say that this topic is highly controversial. Compensation goes deep with people. It's kind of like education and religion. And it's very difficult for me to make blanket statements that equally apply to everyone in the line. So I'd ask you to think of this webinar kind of like an upscale buffet in Las Vegas. If you don't like the green beans, you don't have to eat them. And what I mean by that is I'd hope that everyone would just take away a few concepts that they will be able to apply to their particular business, but I know that you'll all do it just a little bit differently. And the other motivation for broaching this particular subject has to do with the sign of the times. And that is, I think, a harsh lesson that many entrepreneurs learned during the recession is that a cardinal sin in the age of volatility is to have high fixed costs. And for many businesses, certainly almost every service level business, labor is treated like a fixed cost and often the most substantive fixed cost. And one thing that I've observed that publicly traded companies seem to have figured out a long time ago, and almost every Fortune 500 company utilizes the methodology that I'm going to share with you today, is that you must have not only a compensation system that's fair, but it's also variable based on demand. In other words, when revenue contracts, you need to be able to dramatically reduce your labor costs kind of in sync with the volume of your business. So if we look at the environment pre-recession, we had very meager GNP growth, but labor costs were escalating very quickly. If you rewind back to then, you'll remember there was a lot of healthcare inflation, workman's comp was going up, and many companies actually became quite bloated. And their only sensible reaction to lower demand at that time was they had to lay off workers. So some organizations, they just trimmed fat, and others had to cut deeper into tendon and bone. So the first conclusion that I'd hope that we'd reach together today is that if labor costs rise faster than profits, that's a zero-sum game for the business owner. It's a game they simply cannot win. And unfortunately, the traditional model for compensation is anything but flexible and nimble. In many cases, 90% or more of cash compensation in an organization is paid in base salary, which places all of the burden for economic fluctuations on the business owner, and it doesn't do much to motivate employees to the extent that they take ownership in the business. And I can tell you that the most common complaint that I hear from entrepreneurs all the time is that they wish that their employees would be more accountable. And I would suggest that the traditional model for compensation actually reinforces that sense of entitlement that some of us feel with our employees and creates some obstacles in terms of optimizing productivity. But I'd also say right now, employers have a unique window. And that is that employees have been accepting they may be more accepting of changes in their compensation system because they've been financially beaten down for the last 2 or 3 years. You know, not only have they had to accept pay cuts and layoffs and furloughs, plant closures, and so on, a lot of them have had little hope that they'd gain the momentum back in their compensation and be in a position to retire comfortably. So while I would say the last few years has been difficult for employers, it's also been extremely difficult for employees. So I think we need to put ourselves in their shoes for just a moment. The other thing that I just want to mention is that the old days of the business owner rolling in before Christmas and subjectively and arbitrarily handing out bonuses is just over. That's a recipe for spending time in the labor board and the EEOC hearings and a lot of cold, dark places that none of us really want to be. So I have some solutions I want to offer. And I love this slide because it kind of validates the progression I mentioned earlier, which Bain does this study every year. And what they do is they rank the management initiatives that deliver the most value in terms of financial return to organizations. And in the top six are strategic planning, scorecarding, and pay for performance, with pay for performance being ranked as number one. And the reason that I advocate for this combination is that these three principles, what they do is they directly impact how employees not only relate to your strategy, but your strategic initiatives and your general direction as a corporation, and their contribution directly to the bottom line. Another study that I found really interesting was done by the authors of the HR scorecard, who looked at 2,800 companies. And what they did was they sliced the organizations into three segments: the top 10% in terms of financial performance, the bottom 10%, and the middle 80%. And then they compared the HR practices of the most profitable companies with the least profitable companies. And this is what they found. The top-performing companies had 4 times the sales per employee, 3 times the market valuation. And for the top performers, 80% of them had leveraged pay performance compared to only 2% for the poor-performing companies. And I think this is a very powerful indicator that these best-in-class companies think very differently about talent and how they're using incentives in a highly strategic way. And you'll see there's also comparable numbers there around training and performance management. And I think that it's very important to note that incentives don't work in a vacuum. Incentives need to be leveraged within a overall performance management system. And so I'm gonna come back and talk to you a little bit more about that in a bit. So here are some general rules of the road regarding performance-based pay. First, the incentives have to be sizable enough that they alter behavior. So if incentives are, say, 10% of compensation, that's not enough to move the needle. Second, employees need to trust the numbers. So you need to have an accounting system or ERP or even a spreadsheet of measurements that employees view as credible. So they have to be they have to view the numbers throughout the year and kind of in real time. Also, management needs to be thoughtful about creating a pool, a bonus pool. Generally, that's best when it's based on incremental profit. So just say, for example, that your historical EBITDA in your organization is about $2 million. You might create a pool of, say, $200,000 or $300,000 and only pay that out if you meet your profit goal, whatever that might be, say, $2.1 or $2.2 million. In EBITDA. And the same would be true regardless of your company size. You come up with a bonus pool that you're only going to pay out if certain financial barometers are met. I also want to reinforce what I said a couple of minutes ago. Incentives don't work on their own. It's very important that other forms of motivation, such as positive reinforcement, be married with the incentive system. If it's going to have any teeth long term. I've heard of entrepreneurs who they put in these very luxurious incentive plans and treat their employees badly, and that doesn't provide the right environment for the incentive to be truly useful. So as I mentioned earlier, I'm a big proponent of scorecarding, and let me tell you why. Through every sector of our economy, the large customers, so I'm talking about Walmart and Microsoft and Boeing and even the U.S. government, they're scoring all of their suppliers. And that's putting a lot of pressure on the suppliers to manage their service level. So what a lot of them are doing is they're scoring their vendors and their employees. And this management trend is kind of cascading down to our economy where everyone is realizing that we need to be much better at measurements if we're going to create competitive advantage. So every company I work with has some form of KPIs, and a lot of them are financial driven. So Dana, what's a limitation of financial measurements?
The rear view mirror.
Right.
Historical.
They're historical. So what we advocate for in a scorecarding system is identifying measurements that are more predictive in nature. So, for example, if you went into any manufacturing plant in America, there'd be at least one number predominantly displayed in the plant. Dana, what would that be?
Usually safety metrics.
Right. So what you might see other things, but one thing you'll always see is some variant of days since lost time injury or something like that. And all I'm really proposing here is a similar mindset but on a much broader scale. So let me make a distinction for you between what you might see in financials and the types of things you'd see in a scorecarding system. So I work with a client. They're a regional printer. And I can tell you, regardless of how challenging your business is, I doubt there's anyone on the line more difficult business than being a regional printer right now. But what one of the things they identified 3 or 4 years ago is that they had a lot of defects, and what they came to realize was that whenever their department heads met before a job and compared notes and planned larger jobs, they reduced their defects. So what would show up on the P&L as waste, the scorecard number, a measurement actually was percentage of the time that they held a pre-planning meeting for jobs over $10,000. And their defects went down over $100,000 in a year. So there's very much a kind of a cause and effect in the numbers that you use in a scorecarding system. It also creates, I think, a very significant cultural change, which is that in every corporation there's dysfunction. And the dysfunction is built in because of the nature of the way corporations are built. If you have functional departments like accounting, finance, sales, marketing, engineering, design, or operations, there's a natural tendency for the managers to make decisions that will enable that function, and sometimes to the detriment of other departments. So one real big lift that you get out of scorecarding is that it helps to get everyone swimming in the same direction and buy into the same set of strategic priorities. So one of the things that's very, very important about scorecarding is that the numbers have to be public and they have to be seen often. So just like the analogy I used earlier with the safety number in the back of the plant, what you really want to see happen, like I'm working with a client right now that is in an industry where cost control is very important. And every single employee, you know, they walk into the office every day, they have flat screens up around the building, and the first thing they do is they go look to see yesterday's numbers. And those don't have to be revenue and profit numbers, they could be more operational numbers, but something that gives an indication of how well the company is performing. So here's an example. I'm sorry, this page isn't showing very well, but here's an example of some scorecard metrics you might use and potential weightings for them. And I'm sure some of you have heard about the balanced scorecard, which is a kind of rigorous methodology employed by a couple of Harvard professors. And frankly, what I'm talking about is something much simpler than that. I don't know that the typical small and mid-market company needs that level of complexity. What I think is important to keep sight of is, you know, what are the numbers that will allow you to evaluate your business in real time, and then teach those to even your frontline staff so they kind of understand the importance of various activities that they're involved in day to day. Okay, so here's an example of a pay-per-performance model. And while I think there's some best practices we can discuss here, like I mentioned earlier, I don't think pay-per-performance works in every environment equally. And I know that everyone won't do it the same way. But there's a couple of important principles here that I think there's a couple of things we always need to guard against in the design of a plan. The first is what often happens is a company is a strong performer, and yet they have employees that aren't strong performers. So if you pay the same bonus to every one of those employees, what you're doing is you're incenting poor performance. And then the other thing I think you need to guard against is the opposite of that, which is what happens when the company's not doing well, but they have individual performers that are just knocking it out of the park. I mean, if you don't pay any incentive in those cases, that's an opportunity to lose some of your best talent. So this particular methodology that I'm sharing kind of balances out those problems. So in this example, you have a manager with a $100,000 salary and a 20% allowable bonus. And you'll notice that he has three potential buckets. The first is the financial performance of the corporation. So if your company doesn't practice open book management, you may not have EBITDA kind of numbers here, but there are other numbers you could use, whether they be gross margin or it may even be some kind of index on growth, so percentage growth of EBITDA or whatever. However you do it, financial performance should be very heavily weighted. In this example, in the top of the Can they see my cursor here, Dana? Can you see my cursor right now? No. So in the top of the yellow box, the financial indicators are weighted at 50%. Then the second section represents the scorecard numbers. And again, the reason why I advocate that is these are numbers, they could be department numbers or company-wide numbers, where people will become engaged in the success of certain things that are happening within the company. And that bucket might be in the 20 or 30% range in terms of weighting. And then the third bucket would be the individual's goals that they set with their manager in advance, or they could be particular deliverables they have during the year. And, you know, while the first two buckets are usually kind of set by management, the third bucket is very individual, and I think it requires a real mindset where the company supports training managers, mid-managers, on how to coach people, how to be proactive with setting goals in advance, and creating a system where they can do well financially should they meet all of their objectives. So if you were implementing a pay-for-performance model, you'd probably have some calculation like this for every employee. It doesn't really require a fancy ERP system. Many organizations have it. They just have it kind of built into their software. Others use something simple like a Word document or a spreadsheet. I'm often asked a question about this particular slide, about what happens when there are numbers that are not directly controlled by an employee. And I think it goes back to the mindset that I mentioned earlier, which is that is a non-entrepreneurial mindset that entitles people. So what I mean by that is you, the business owner, if you have a workman's comp claim or you have waste in the plant, that might not be your fault, but what ends up at the end of the day is you have to pay for it. And I think there are ways you can mitigate that in your scorecard model where you focus more on things that people are directly responsible for. However, let me give you a kind of a real-life example. If you went into your typical sales manager and you said, "Hey, Johnny, we decided cash flow is strategically important to our corporation, and what we're finding is our receivables are getting a little behind, and I'd really appreciate it if you'd have your guys call these 10 or 15 clients that are kind of behind," you can imagine how most sales managers would react to that kind of discussion. They'd say something to the effect of, "Well, that's accounting's job. Sales doesn't do collectibles." So that's kind of a silo mentality. So when you have numbers that everyone shares that might include things that are not directly within their level of authority, they might just be a little more willing to support the cause. In this case, maybe it takes less time to make a few phone calls to customers than it does arguing with the CFO on whose responsibility it is. So I often compare paper performance, I'm sorry if this is a crude analogy, but it's kind of like capitalism. It's not a perfect system, but it's the best system we know. Dana, do we have any questions so far?
Yeah, I was just going to mention, those are great examples. We actually have two questions, and I'd like to encourage everybody, as we're going through the program today, to submit questions if you have them. So the first question is, are you in favor of open book management?
I'm not here to tell business owners that they should practice open book management, but I am intrigued that, if you watch a baseball game, when a hitter comes up to the plate, we know every possible statistic about their performance, average, RBIs, home runs, everything. And yet in our business culture, we tend to hold things tight to the vest. I think there are numbers that entrepreneurs should be comfortable sharing with every employee. And perhaps there's other numbers they're not. So I don't think you have to have open book management to scorecard. The more open you are, the more information you share, the more educate people, the smarter they will become, would be my general reaction to that.
Okay. Actually, one of our clients has big screen TVs throughout their organization, and they have different messages they put up for inspirational things. But they actually show shipping,
right?
Returns, sales volume, and for the sales department, they actually show the numbers of where people are at. So it's very open in that environment. So here's the second question. You mentioned the need for the proportion of incentives to base comp needs to be higher than perhaps it has been traditionally in many companies. How do you create an incentive plan that a small or medium-sized business can afford?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. Okay, so this is kind of the rub. So if I were to say to you, for example, that I would advocate that 60% of compensation be in base, you can't get there overnight. You can't go to your team and say, hey, boys and girls, we're going to roll back your salaries 30% because that's just not going to get you any buy-in. What I think you can do, and actually get to this in a couple of minutes, is you can freeze the salaries, and then you can go to your team and say, look, we're interested in a new partnership, and that partnership is we'd like you to be invested like we are and want to treat you more like a business owner. And what that means is I'm willing to share more profit with you when we have upside, when we do well. And the trade-off, the sacrifice I'm asking you to make is I'm freezing your salary where it is today. Now, I'm not suggesting at all that that's an easy sell because it's not. This is very hard to do. But going back to my initial point in the very beginning of the webinar, you know, the payoff for the business and for the entrepreneur is you create the variability in your labor. And so you can move it with demand, and you're a lot less apt to have to lay people off if demand is poor, which is no entrepreneur feels good about that. And then also, I think you can provide a tremendous upside to your employees, and maybe you can create an environment where you have better retention and better morale and just a different kind of feel in your company.
Okay. That's great. Thank you, Mark. Let's take one more question, and then we're going to move on. With paper performance plan in place, how does the president or owner avoid micromanagement criticism by direct reports?
I would argue that if you, again, my philosophy is you have to follow the progression of you have to have strategy first, numbers second, scorecarding, or I should say pay performance third. If you have that in place, I would suggest that that requires less input by senior management, because what happens is you teach people how to manage themselves. If they understand the ramifications of bad quality or poor cycle time or waste or whatever, then they will make the decisions on your behalf because it supports the company and ultimately their incentives. So I think it's actually the reverse of that. I think there's less micromanagement, and I think there's nothing wrong with any senior leader in a company setting expectations with their employees at the beginning of the year and then giving them the latitude to succeed. And then if they're not succeeding, then it's your responsibility to check in with them and coach them up so that they can be successful.
Well, we're going to take one more question on this because, Rajiv, I want to thank you for calling in all the way from and attending all the way from India today. So thank you. So this is a part A and B question. And the question, let me get this up here. Part A, how do you hold salespeople really accountable? Is there such a thing as too many base for the sales force? And B, how do you build true transparency in the evaluation of performance measures that may be less than quantifiable?
I'm sorry. I need to hear that again. Can you do the whole thing again?
Okay. Hey, how do you hold – I'm reading this directly.
Okay, I see
how do you hold salespeople really accountable? Is there such a thing as too much base for the sales force? That's A. And B, how do you build true transparency in the evaluation of performance measures that may be less quantifiable?
Okay. So in response to question A, one tendency I see in sales organizations is that the way we measure results is purely sales. And I think that a lot of senior managers would agree that that is not the only way that we see success in a sales force. Sometimes there are salespeople, regional managers, vice presidents who what they do is they enable more profitability because they behave in a certain way. So they're sensitive to other departments and they do things beyond just sell well. So I think the method for accountability is no different than any other employee. You preset goals. Maybe you evaluate them. Maybe you get input from other team members on how successful the salespeople are in consulting within their own organizations. Maybe you go out and talk to customers and get their evaluation about how you're doing as a company. So there's a lot of things beyond pure sales and margin you can measure there. As far as question B, how do you build true transparency in the evaluation? I think that, you know, obviously there's always transparency between the employee and their manager. I'm always interested that people keep numbers so close to the vest, as I mentioned earlier. So I'm not sure if this is what you meant by the question, but I think within a team, there should be more candid discussion about how everyone's doing. So I think it's valuable for team members to sit down together and kind of do a 360 or cross-pollinate in terms of the performance of other people they work with.
Okay. Thank you very much. Rajiv, thank you again. And Rajiv has his team attending today, and for those of you from all over the world and the United States, don't want to leave out domestically, but I just want to welcome everybody and thank you all for attending. We have more to come. So, Mark, why don't you let me go to the next slide?
Okay. So, there are a couple of caveats to all of this. First of all, it's assumed that if you put it in a pay performance system, that you've already had parity in terms of paying people fairly based on their job description and responsibilities. And, you know, usually, you know, the sophisticated HR people in Fortune 500 companies, what they do is they evaluate salary bands. So what is the range that people in this particular position would normally earn? And then they often do what's known as a true-up to make sure that people are within that range. Second, it assumes that you have a rigorous performance management system, and I think this might have been the root of the question that I just tried to answer. This pay-for-performance kind of methodology will fail if it's not supported by ongoing review and discussion about the performance of every employee, because that's really what you're after. You're just using money as another lever. But that's usually not the most important thing to the employee. The most important thing to them is that they feel like they're part of something bigger than they are. So having those conversations frequently and being candid and supporting your employees and teaching them how that they can succeed in their role is very, very important in terms of getting the most out of a system like this. I just got off pace here. So here are the steps, kind of in chronological order, that I think you would need to go through in terms of building a system like this. First is to gain agreement on the strategic direction of the organization. Then put in a scorecard and create that scorecard culture first. Then analyze the costs and benefits of an incentive plan. So that's doing the math on, well, if we were to perform at X, then we could afford to pay Y. And, of course, that math is very, very important. Potentially freeze the salaries or at least slow down the growth of salaries so that you can afford to have the higher proportion of incentives as the total compensation. And then create that pool so that it's a win-win for the employees. And then a real, real important step is getting buy-in from your team. And so one thing that I suggest is that at the time you're evaluating a pay-for-performance system, that you include maybe even some frontline people. You know, maybe even if you have hourly employees in a plant, get one or two of them in the meeting and say, look, we want you here to kind of represent the team and just give us your ideas and get a number of people involved in that discussion so that when it comes to fruition, it could be representative of the needs of your overall organization. And then make sure, as I mentioned, that you have the robust performance cycle. Now let me talk a little bit about how bonuses might coexist with your performance management system. So, of course, some companies, they have annual reviews based on anniversary date, and others have a system based on a fixed date and time. When you're using a scorecard and an incentive plan with this kind of design, it's most effective if you do the fixed date reviews. Now, the downside of doing fixed date reviews is that your managers have to do them all at the same time, and that creates a burden for them. But the upside is that it does allow you to do the math on the pool and distribute the pool evenly. So there's kind of a cost-benefit analysis you need to go through on that decision. But keep in mind that before the recession and the kind of the giant sucking sound that followed, the purpose of giving raises was to keep pace with inflation. And companies were given the 3 or 4% raises, sometimes more. There hasn't been any inflation up until this year. So I just don't see it as a sensible system that you have an arbitrary arbitrary bonus system, which some companies certainly have, and then you arbitrarily hand out raises as well. I think that if an employee is performing well and you evaluate their behaviors and the types of things you would normally see in performance review, it is appropriate you give them a small bump every year. And then you use the incentive plan to complement that. It's kind of how most of our clients go about it. So, what other questions do we have, Dana?
Well, what we're going to do is we're going to open up the line in just a minute. From past programs, people who have attended it have asked that when we do open the line up that we don't record it.
Okay.
So what I want to do, if everyone can please hold the line, I want to close this portion of the program down and just say a few words. And then, so why don't we go to the last slide, Mark? And so in just a few minutes after we conclude this show and turn off the recording, we're going to open up the line so you can have an opportunity to talk directly with Mark. Now, I'm going to mention this a couple times. We have so many people on. I'm going to ask everyone to please put their individual phones on mute, and then if you want to ask a question, just open it up. Actually, before we conclude here, this part, there's a question that just came in. Mark, do you favor variable-based salary review dates based on date of hire and last raise, or do you favor one date for all base salary reviews?
Yeah, I just kind of spoke to that. So I think either works, and it is difficult to change once you've instituted one or the other. But I'm just saying, for purposes of a pool, if you were going to distribute money in a pool and you want to budget for that, it's a lot easier to do it with a fixed date.
Okay. So we're going to close this down in just a second. You'll see on your screen an area to register for our upcoming August 23rd open line program, which is entitled Building a Sales and Marketing Plan That's Implementable and Within Budget. So please sign up today, reserve a space for yourself, and let us know if you'd like your staff or other colleagues to attend. In the next few days, you'll receive a recording and PowerPoint for today's program, so please feel free to share it with others in your organization or within your association. Again, hold the line, because I just have something else I need to read off here and then close the recording down, and then we're going to open the line up.
While you're doing that, if you don't mind me mentioning, if folks on the line are really interested in this topic and would like more detail, a lot of it's covered in my book, which is available either on Amazon or at barnesandnoble.com. And again, the title is Intended Consequences.
You can see that on the screen also. Mark and I want to thank you for your time today and for all the valuable ideas that were shared. If you'd like to contact Mark for further discussion on specifics about your industry, your team, or to have some one-to-one time together, or to discuss any of the ideas shared today, you'll see Mark's contact information on your screen. The information shared today is the property of Lighthouse Consulting Services, LLC, located in Santa Monica, California. Our mission statement is to bring effective insight to your organization. If you'd like more information on our services, please write me at dana@lighthouseconsulting.com. If you have other topics you'd like us to address, just let us know. I want to thank you so much for joining us, and we're looking forward to having you join us for our next Keeping on Track Open Line program. Have a great day. Now, everyone hold the line. Let me turn the recording off, and we'll be right back.